Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Our East Coast infrastructure for ag is fair, but it really comes into play when we're at kind of a max capacity everywhere else.
Brian Burke is president of JSA.
So from a soybean export standpoint or a soybean meal exports, or that's more of our overflow demographic of the country. From a meats perspective, it means a lot more. So when you look at your cold storage meats and the containerized pieces off the East Coast, where we have a lot of hog and poultry production especially, that becomes very important off the East Coast there, where trade agreements can certainly be helpful from a value-added product standpoint. When you come back to whole grains or protein meals, it's very difficult to pull away from the efficiencies that are right in the middle of the country that feed out of the Gulf of Mexico in bulk container shipments.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
If we don't have a market that works efficiently, that we can understand, and we transmit it from a value standpoint, we'll make a lot of bad decisions. And that's exactly what was going on back in the 80s and 90s when all the cattle were at the same price.
Randy Block is CEO of Cattle Facts at their annual Outlook Seminar at CattleCon 25.
The industry's moved a long way as we've thought about how we've come through here. You think about profitability in our industry, you put it back, and we talk about it from a demand standpoint. I want to remind everybody in the room, the only place we get new dollars into our business, the only place we get new dollars into our business is through the consumer. If we're not satisfying the consumer, they're going to take their dollars elsewhere. So if you look at this data and you go back in here, I know I've shared this chart with you for a number of years. It's a great benchmark. It's not perfect, but it's a good benchmark of what's going on in these trends. Remember, we lost half of our beef demand in 1980 through the 1990s. Half of it. We had $32 a head profitability for our industry to share. As Topper would say, that dog don't hunt. Right? You look at where we are today and you come through and you look at this growth. Again, understand what's driving this growth. It's that quality drive, the quality focus that we've had in the industry. And again, I think we've still got a lot that we can continue to develop in this as we move down the road. So I compliment you. I congratulate you all for what you've been able to do and staying focused on that target to give the consumer what they want and what they demand on a day-to-day basis. We know retail prices are going to get higher. As retail gets higher, we are going to... It has to. We've got to ration some of this smaller supply that I just showed you on these charts. So it's going to get higher. We will see some weakening in beef demand show up in here in 2025 and 2026. That's how markets work. So just be aware of that. If you look at the global consumer, been a big part of our business, hadn't it? $450 a head from a per head basis has been derived out of these export markets. Again, we had another really strong year as far as export values that we saw in 2024. Volume was off a little, but value is incredibly strong. These export markets will continue to be important for us. Keep in mind, only 4% of the world population is in the U.S. So we will continue to develop that. These supplies are going to stay tight, as we've talked about. Jerry talked about right off the bat this morning when we opened our session, risk management is key. We're going to see these markets move. And if you think about the very simple concept, we've got a market that's up in here trading at record high levels, and we're talking about 8 to 10% ranges around these annual averages. That's a big range, isn't it? That's a lot of volatility. But we're getting into the stage of the market now that I think we should definitely be expecting that as we go forward. I leave you with one equation down here at the bottom of the chart. And again, this is one of my favorites in here. I think regardless of our businesses, what we're doing, we always need to look at what is our value proposition. What is our value proposition? And again, I look at it from what is our benefits package divided by cost. And the industry, we're winning in this equation. A lot of you in your individual businesses, as you're building genetics, you're feeding cattle, you're running stocker cattle, you're running a processing facility. This is something I think that drives each and every one of our businesses day in and day out.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I would like for you to highlight for the committee and for the administration, for the new secretary, something that we've highlighted to her and others as recently as this morning with conversations with USDA personnel. But the quick implementation of disaster assistance, just a reminder of why that matters.
At a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing on the ag economy, Kansas Senator Jerry Moran to Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall and Farmers Union President Rob LaRue.
Well, one, we need the secretary placed in her position, and we look forward to that, because the sooner we do that, the sooner we get it out. It is absolutely critical we do this, because we have been put in this situation because we do not have a modernized five-year farm bill. It's been kicked down the road 2 years. We appreciate the extension, but it's not going to solve the problem.
We've already talked about the economic challenges out there that are ongoing, not only looking back. So the need to get that rolled out as quickly as possible is actually paramount. Absolutely.
My next comment may not be a question, but it is something I want to highlight that you both indicated. That you, I think it was you, Mr. President, I guess that doesn't limit the scope of who I'm talking about. The Farm Bureau President, Mr. Duvall, representation not just of farmers, representation of the communities they live in, rural America. I mean, I really think this is hugely important to the country as well as to the people who want to raise their families in a place that we all call home. And I would highlight that just the things that we face, that you will have policy positions and input puts on. We've talked about tariffs. We've talked about disaster assistance, the tax provisions. Zippy, you mentioned those in your opening statement, the continuation of those provisions, a new farm bill. That just has huge consequences on farmers, obviously. But that's the result of our decisions and outcome of those debates determine whether or not my hospital doors stay open, there are kids in our schools, whether or not the grocery store exists. For a long time, I've indicated that where I come from, economic development is often whether or not there's a grocery store in town. And that requires, when you say that sentence, a lot of explanation. Well, why would that be? But in the absence of farmers, we lose community banks, grocery stores, the hospital. Those things are important. It suggests to me that we need to have a complete focus on how do we get commodity prices up in addition to getting input costs down. And I would indicate that renewable fuels is an important aspect of this. We are fully engaged in trying to pursue and implement SAF, renewable aviation fuel. Trade agreements, you both have mentioned, I would welcome your input on what countries stand out to you that are prime for us to reach a bilateral trade agreement with. And I'll pause there for that answer.
The first one that comes to mind is India and the Asian Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think implied by your question is also making sure that those existing markets that we have that we rely so heavily on are not lost.
That's a good point. You know, occasionally I'll have someone in Kansas, a farmer perhaps, who indicates let's take care of ourselves, and I'm all for doing that. But taking care of ourselves in the case of agriculture means trade, exports, it means markets. My answer has been sometimes, so what 40% of acres in Kansas do you not want to plant and harvest? Because we produce more than we can consume, and therefore all the opportunities we need for exports, all the opportunities we need for trade, all the opportunities we need to utilize that the commodity outcome, the output, into other products, including renewable fuels, become all the more important.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Kenneth Hartman, Jr. I am a fifth-generation farmer from Waterloo, Illinois, where my family and I, including one of my daughters, operates a grain farm. I'm serving as president of the National Corn Growers Association.
Hartman testifying recently before a Senate Ag Committee hearing on the ag economy.
Today, I would like to focus on challenges in the farm economy, the need for a strengthened farm bill, additional actions in Congress that can take this year to support corn growers. The United States is a corn-producing superpower, growing about one-third of the corn in the world. Despite record-setting productivity, the value of corn production has dropped substantially, but costs have not. The average corn price farmers receive in the market has declined by 40% from 2022 to now. Comparatively, the average cost to produce corn has only declined by just 6%. A major component of the cost of production of corn is fertilizer, representing about one-third of the operating cost. Although fertilizer prices have declined from 2022's peak, costs remain relatively high. On average, American corn farmer is facing losses over $160 per acre of corn for their crop year 2025 coming on, following losses over $100 per acre in both 2023 and 2024. Sustained high input costs and dropping commodity prices leave American farmers in a vulnerable financial position. Corn growers appreciate those who work hard to include an agriculture provision in the American Relief Act. We are working to ensure that the timely implementation of economics and disaster assistance programs. Once the aid is received, it will be appreciative by growers, particularly those who have faced steep financial strains from the recent years of crop and revenue losses. As we look ahead, further action is needed to improve the Farm Bill safety net programs and market outlook. Corn growers are disappointed that the solution for nationwide year-round E15 was ultimately not included. It would come at no cost to the federal government and would boost the corn economy. We appreciate the champions on Capitol Hill, including Senator Fisher, Klobuchar, and Ernst, and several members of this committee who continued to lead on this important issue. As a grassroots association, we have worked to prioritize policy recommendations for a farm bill. Our priorities include protecting federal crop insurance, strengthening and producer safety net, bolstering U.S. international markets and development efforts, supporting voluntary conservation programs, and champion initiatives important to rural America. Many of these priorities are reflected in the Senate framework that was released last year. A new farm bill with improved safety net programs is overdue. Congress can strengthen existing USDA programs through strategic investments and policy enhancements. NCJ would like to see this process move forward in a bipartisan manner for a farm bill to be signed into law as soon as possible. NCJ recently released a report where we identified six key targets for enhancing competitiveness of corn. These actions include developing new foreign markets, expanding consumer access to higher blends of ethanol, fueling innovations in a new uses research, ensuring sensible regulations, and extending key federal tax provisions. This is a roadmap to establish an environment in which farmers can be innovative, productive, and profitable. In closing, we would look forward to working with you to confront the current and engaging issues impacting business, families, rural communities. Thank you for your support of the American farmer.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We certainly don't expect that we're going to see anything as rapid as what we saw in the previous cattle cycle back in 2014 and 15. This is going to be a much more prolonged cycle as we come through here.
Randy Block is CEO of Cattle Facts, speaking at the Cattle Facts Annual Ag Outlook Seminar at CattleCon 25.
This increased profitability at the cow-calf level, obviously, I think, as an industry, the challenge is we need to keep more profitability back there to where we don't have to go through some of the magnitudes of these cycles that we do. Now, as you transition and you think about the way we're merchandising cattle in our industry, I thought this would be a good perspective for everybody to think about all the changes that we've seen. We've talked to you about demand and the demand growth, some of the premiums that we're seeing take place in these markets. I think this is a good perspective. If you look at the number of cattle that we're selling on grids and formulas, it's increased substantially here over the last two decades, hasn't it? Again, we've gone from about 30% of the cattle selling on some sort of a formula value-based marketing agreement to about 65%. Cash has declined. Negotiated grid cattle marketing has increased significantly. Why is this happening? It's happening because of the price signals that we're able to transmit back through our markets with these value-based marketings, the premiums, branded beef programs. All of these things are instrumental in changing these trends. And these grid premiums are obviously substantial as we think back of what they've been and what they've been worth over time. I thought this would be a good perspective for those of you that don't live in this world every day like so many of the producers that are in the room, but just take a peek at this chart. look at this real shift that we've gone through from, I would say, we were strictly a commodity business back in the 1980s and 90s. Remember, in that time period, basically only 50% of the cattle were grading choice and prime. And you look at this shift that we've had in here, now we've got the increase in the upper two-thirds choice and prime animals that are in our production systems. This is why we're enjoying the demand growth that we're experiencing in our industry. Look how this select number has declined on here. Look at that red line. We'll produce nearly as many prime carcasses in 2025 as we do select carcasses. Who would have thought it? Wasn't that many years ago our industry was producing 2% prime. This last year we produced 11% prime. So as you think about what this means from a consumer experience, we've all seen that data, and you think back, I've shared it with you over the last several years, that it wasn't that many years ago, up to half, 25 to 50% of the consumer eating experiences were not good. They were not favorable. And when they came back and they voted with their wallet, we weren't getting their votes, were we? So as the industry shifted in here, we saw this increase in the number of prime carcasses, and I'm showing you this on a million head count so you can see what's really happened in here. 4.5 million head increase in prime and upper two-third choice carcasses from where we were 20 years ago. You add the low choice into it, we've got 6 to 6.5 million more on an annual basis. Nearly the same decline that we saw from a select standpoint. So, again, the industry got the message. We focus on the quality. That quality focus that we've had as we've looked across the industry is translated to this change in beef demand.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
As everyone in this room knows, the state of agriculture economy is in dire straits. We're in trouble.
At a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing on the ag economy, Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville with Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall and Farmers Union President Rob LaRue.
It's not getting much better. Our farmers are struggling. Producers have lost over $40 billion in net farm income since 2022, and the current agriculture trade deficit is $45.5 billion. We cannot stay on that same track. Producers in my state of Alabama and across the country are producing bumper crops, but they can't break even, much less make a profit due to low commodity prices and high input costs, interest rates, and inflation. It's been 13 years since reference prices for Title I commodities have been updated. Yet the cost of production are not what they were 13 years ago. In fact, they are 30 to 40% higher. Our farmers need a new farm bill with a strong and reliable farm safety net to support producers amidst fluctuating market conditions, natural disasters, and skyrocketing production costs. The $10 billion in economic assistance Congress passed in December was a crucial lifeline to keep some producers afloat, and we need to ensure it is implemented quickly. Mr. Duvall, in your testimony, you discussed the importance of extending the expiring provisions of President Trump's 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to keep farmers in business. Can you discuss the tax provisions that our producers rely upon the most?
Yes, sir, I can. One, it provided for a reduced tax rate. Most of our farmers, are 98% of them, are operating under pass-through entities, and that's important to them. Section 199A is important to them. Very much because it preserves that 20% business income deduction. Section 179 also needs to be continued. It's called bonus depreciation. It allows our farmers to reinvest in their business so they can meet the goals that country has for us, whether it be conservation, climate, whatever it might be, soil health. We have to have that bonus depreciation. And then, of course, the last one, and we spoke about young farmers and beginning farmers, estate taxes. Estate taxes, it needs to be eliminated. It needs to be eliminated so that we can continue to pass our farms on for generations to come and make sure we bring some stability to our system, our food system. And this is something people sweat blood from to pay for. It's their land, their home, and they want to keep it in production. And there's so many pressures on that land staying in production. It's just unreal, and this pressure makes it unbelievable when a family person dies and you have to sell part of the farm to pay the taxes. And what does that do? It takes it out of production. puts it into houses or solar panels or whatever, and it never comes back to agriculture.
Thank you. Bonus appreciation, estate taxes. My phone rings off the wall, and we need to listen to it, and I'm sure the rest of the senators are the same. Mr. Duval, the agriculture trade deficit, as I just said, is $45.5 billion. It's shameful. America has the best farmers and producers in the world. What suggestions do you have to improve ag trade and close the gap?
We got to have new agreements. We got to open up the market. We can compete with anybody in the world as long as we're allowed to use innovation and the research that is coming to our farms. It keeps us on cutting edge. And as long as our farmers are led by voluntary market-based programs, we will do anything this country asks us to do if it's led in that direction. And we have proven that in conservation by putting over 140 million acres into conservation over the last few decades. And that's the size of California and New York State together.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm Nathan Reed from Mariana, Arkansas. My wife, Kristen, and I farm 9,200 acres of cotton, corn, soybeans, and rice. I'm blessed to farm in the Arkansas Delta, where we produce high-quality cotton with yields that surpass many areas of the cotton belt.
Reed testifying before a Senate Ag Committee on the current state of the ag economy.
Despite vast technological improvements, it is impossible to yield our way out of this current economic crisis. I have grave concerns about what the future holds for me and for other farm families across the country. I personally know producers who have spent their entire lives farming but may not be able to secure operating loans this year. My equity is depleting every year. My children love growing up on the farm, and one day I would love nothing more than for them to join me in this business just as I was able to join my father. Unfortunately, considering the current economic climate, it's hard to imagine such a possibility. Our industry understands that we must look inward to address many of the current challenges. There are some problems that congressional leaders may not be able to solve. We must work with the companies that supply our inputs to get production costs more in line with our global competitors. We must also find innovative ways to increase the demand for U.S. cotton. We are grateful to Congress for providing the $31 billion in economic and disaster assistance for producers this December. But we must recognize that even timely delivery of economic relief may not be enough to save some producers. To prevent farms from failing, producers need the multi-year certainty that only a new farm bill can provide. We must ensure that any new legislation will take effect in the 2025 crop year. I commend Chairman Bozeman for offering a farm bill framework that addresses many of the National Cotton Council's top priorities by advocating for a significant increase in the PLC reference price and improved access to individual and area-wide crop insurance products. We hope that the next farm bill will also modernize USDA's marketing assistance loans for both upland and Pima cotton, and provide increased support for the U.S. textile industry. I would like to thank Chairman Bozeman for recommending increases to commodity title payment limits. A higher PLC reference price would likely do more than any other single farm bill reform to reassure farm lenders. Cotton costs of production today are roughly 25% higher than support levels are in the 2018 Farm Bill. The bankers I speak with don't want to rely on last-minute temporary aid from Congress. Instead, we all want long-term solutions. In closing, my wife, four children, and I live and work in the Arkansas Delta, where agriculture is the lifeblood of the local economy. Any of us who are parents know the obligation we have to protect and provide for our family. If Congress does not act quickly to provide an adequate safety net, I will be forced to answer a few very difficult questions. Am I putting my family's future at risk by continuing the tradition of farming? What happens to my local community without the backbone of agriculture? And perhaps an even bigger question: what happens to our country if we lose our ability to produce the food and fiber we need? That's not an exaggeration. It's questions that I and many other producers are asking.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The initial look at farm income forecast for 2025 per USDA reveals
net farm income. We are forecasting that it will increase in calendar year 2025 relative to 2024.
Yet economist Carrie Litkowski notes this distinction.
What is expected to drive most of the forecast increase in net farm income in 2025 are direct government payments to farmers.
A forecasted $33 billion increase from the previous year. In terms of forecasted cash receipts for sale of commodities, a 0.3% decrease is expected from 2024. Total crop receipts are forecasted to be over 2% lower than the previous year. Also expected to be less in 2025.
Total expenses are going to decline slightly, about 1% or $2.5 billion in 2025.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.